I'd like to thank you all for joining together in the meditation and just go right into a piece of music before going into the talk. This will be a piece called Dance for the Arctic Moon, and it's dedicated to the sacred feminine power. The moon, as you may know, represents cross-culturally spiritual awakening and also the feminine dimension of awareness. And the Arctic, the north, represents going within of the four directions. And so we can continue perhaps in this feeling of going within and connecting with the feminine, which is the power of receptivity, of being open at the top to a higher awareness. And I'd like to just dedicate this music to the healing of all of our relations and to creating a field of awareness and consciousness for awakening here. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks to the piano tuner also. Always good to have a well-tuned piano. So it's wonderful to be back. I'm not sure when the last time we were here. It's been quite a while. I think 15 to 20 years ago was the last time we were blessed to be at Unity in Spokane, and it's an honor and to be back again and to be able to share with you this morning. So thank you for keeping the fires burning. Not those other fires, the home fires. And thanks for the beautiful story this morning, Sandy. And it's just wonderful to be able to be involved with the Unity movement. As you may be aware, Madeline and I have been traveling now to Unity churches for over 30 years, and I always feel that when we gather together, it's helpful to remember that there are many other, hundreds of other communities that are also gathering. And I think in many ways, the Unity movement is one of the healthiest movements on the planet, in the sense that it's based at its core on the idea of inclusion, kind of this radical inclusion. We're going to include not only everyone is welcome, but we include the different traditions, the wisdom traditions of humanity. None are excluded. If they have something to offer to help us to awaken, Charles and Merrill Fillmore, the co-founders of Unity, were really great students of truth. And I think we're inspired by not only the Western traditions, but also the Eastern traditions, which is really where I've been finding a lot of my inspiration over the years as well. And I love that the underlying idea in Unity also of the importance of connecting with our own intuition. We'll be talking about that in the workshop, and I want to talk about that a little bit now as well. Charles Fillmore is kind of well known for saying each one of us should go straight to headquarters, right? That idea, we don't need an intermediary. We can each connect straight with headquarters. In his case, that meant just ask Myrtle. He had it easy, right? But for all of us, I think the underlying idea is to learn to connect with this intuitive capacity that we have. And they wrote quite a bit about that. I think I was very fortunate when I was getting my PhD at Berkeley. I won't go into the details, but I was just struggling with what I was going to be able to do my final dissertation on. And eventually, I was able to do it on educating intuition in adults. And they went on actually to be recommended, actually nominated to be the best dissertation at Berkeley that year. And it was an attempt that I made to gather together both Western and Eastern perspectives on intuition. And what is intuition? The basic idea underlying everything is that we human beings have two complementary modes of knowing. One, we use words like rationality and logic and intellect and analysis and so forth. The other, we use words like intuition and revelation and inspiration. It's kind of spiritual knowledge that comes directly from within. And we are all raised in a society that emphasizes one and neglects the other. Can you guess which one? So it's so important. I think if you found your way here, you're on the path of reclaiming or making an effort to reconnect with intuition. I think it's the greatest gift we can give, not only to ourselves and our loved ones, but to the planet, to everyone, to humanity, is to connect with our intuition. Why is that? I think, essentially, the problem is, as human beings, we're born into a culture where, in many cases, there's a narrative going on that is not in our best interest, a whole story about our relationship with nature, with animals, with each other, and it's leading to a lot of destruction and violence and domination, exploitation and oppression and so forth. And we're in the midst, I feel, of the rebirth or reconnecting with a new story. And we see that this is an ancient story also. We can see the teachings of Jesus and Buddha and so forth. There's enormous wisdom and capacities to awaken to a deeper story, and it's very much within the Unity movement. And so I think what intuition does, essentially, is it allows us to connect with our own story, our own inner wisdom that's always shining like the sun. There's a great story that I heard back when President Reagan was in office, and it was a joke, basically, but I'll just tell it quickly, because I think it kind of illustrates what I want to say here. The story was that President Reagan had this idea of how we could end the energy crisis once and for all. So he went to all his cabinet ministers and everybody, and he said, I figured it out. We can end the energy crisis if we just do one big project, and that is we build a pipeline from here to the, on Earth to the sun. We build this pipeline, we'll pipe energy in, we can meter it, we can get rich, we get plenty of energy, we can just end the problem. And so he said, think about it, let me know tomorrow what you think. So the ministers came back the next day and he said, as usual, sir, it's another great idea, but the problem is, we put all our best engineers on this. When we're building that pipeline and we get up close to the sun, you know, sir, the temperatures are so extreme up there. Wherever we build the pipe out of, it's going to melt the pipe. He said, that's why I'm president. I already figured that out. When we get up close to the sun, then we'll only build at night. Once again, I'm a former president. But the basic idea is that, you know, we laugh because we know that from the point of view of the sun, right, it's just always shining. From the point of view of us on Earth, it's true. You know, sometimes we, you know, we're turned away, we say the sun's not shining, it's night, or the clouds are covering, the sun's not shining. The sun is shining, right? The clouds are in the way. It's the same thing with our intuition. The sun of our intuition is always shining. It's never not shining. We just happen to be turning in the other direction, or the clouds of our limited and fearful thinking, whatever it is, our programming, the narrative of our society has interfered. So the whole idea with intuition really is not that we have to get intuition, it's basically to remove the obstacles. I think one of the best ways to remove the obstacles is to have a regular practice of some kind, especially a meditation or inner receptivity, to connect with the feminine dimension. We'll talk more about this afternoon, but the basic idea of connecting this capacity to be receptive, which we're really not taught in our society how to do that. We're taught to be, as you were saying, to be busy and active and so forth, but to be able to learn to listen within. And this is something, it's like anything, like playing the piano. I mean, the only reason was I practiced every day. My father made me write it down when I was a kid, 45 minutes a day. And I didn't like doing it at the time, the discipline sometimes, but I'm so glad because it creates the possibility of liberation and freedom when we practice. Whatever we practice, we become good at. That's why I love unity. Unity is the church of practical Christianity. We're not just talking about this, it's like, how do we live this? How do we actually put this into practice in our daily lives? And that, I think, really requires us as individuals to do the inner work so that together as a community we can create a field that is a manifestation of something more than just the narrative of our society. Because as soon as we leave here, we go out and we're bombarded by this narrative, by the stories from the media, from the government, from the corporations, and so forth. And it's really pretty toxic, most of that narrative. And so for us to reaffirm and reconnect and invent, really, within ourselves, the truth, a deeper narrative of interconnectedness, and the beauty, I think, really, of intuition, the great gift it gives us is it gives us our life, our unique life. It doesn't mean that we don't have any problems anymore, we don't have any challenges, now we're in touch with our intuition. It means that we're living our life. And when we do that, then there's a sense when we wake up in the morning of gratitude. I've got another day. It's my life, not somebody else's life. And I think when we do that, we become a field. I want to just tell, you know, briefly in my own case, I remember being born, I was born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts, which was kind of a neat place to be born and raised just because there was this, well, there was these two revolutions, right? The April 19th, if you're in Concord, Massachusetts, April 19th is Patriots Day. It's the, remember Emerson wrote that poem about the battle at the Old North Bridge and hardly a man is now alive. It remembers the famous day in Europe, the Midnight Ride, Paul Revere, and all that. We lived that. I mean, every you know, we would go down. My father would get into his Minuteman outfit, and we'd all go down to the Old North Bridge and reenact the battle, and we'd send the Redcoats back to Boston, and we'd celebrate revolution. You know? If you have a situation that's not good, you know, have a revolution. Why not? You know, we can do that. And so that was one revolution. But then, 100 years later, roughly, there was the Transcendentalist Revolution. So I was born in Emerson Hospital, learned to swim in Walden Pond, went to Thoreau School and Alcott School. You know, there's this whole feeling of the Transcendentalists. And the Transcendentalists were the ones, really, for the first time, brought the teachings of Asia to the soil of the United States. Thoreau had the largest library in the whole United States back in the 1840s of books on Taoism, Buddhism, Hinduism, and so forth. And these were teachings that have really deepened and helped us. The Hindu basic idea of God as both female and male, you know, what a thought, you know. Or the Buddhist idea of God as infinite mind. Or the Taoist idea of God as principle, that you can actually get in harmony with the Tao, you know, with this infinite principle. And so these ideas went, actually were very inspirational to not only to Emerson and Thoreau, but also to Charles Noel Fillmore and many other people. And so I was kind of born into that on some level, I guess. I wasn't really aware of consciousness, but I remember when I went away to college, which was in the early 1970s, I started reading Thoreau and Emerson, and that led me to Walt Whitman and then eventually to Zen. And I remember that led to this book, which I just loved when I read it. I think it kind of changed my life. And some of you may have heard of it. It's kind of an old, unknown book, but it's called Cosmic Consciousness by Richard Buck. He wrote it back in 1890. Anyway, the main point, he was a Canadian, and he basically said this, which I think is still so relevant. He said, basically, that there's two kinds of consciousness. There's self-consciousness and cosmic consciousness. And he said, most human beings live their life in self-consciousness. We're concerned about, basically, ourself. We're trying to get what we want, we're trying to keep away what we don't want, we're basically in a struggle, we're afraid of losing, and there's this continual competition and so forth. But he said, certain people have attained cosmic consciousness, and he had these examples like Jesus and the Buddha and great sages and saints from history, both men and women. He talked about these were examples of cosmic consciousness, and the main point, he said, is we're here on this earth to attain cosmic consciousness. That's our purpose. We're not here for any other reason. We're not here to accumulate, to be well-known, or anything. We're really here to attain cosmic consciousness. And he said that that is the destiny of humanity. That over the years, we're here to evolve so that everyone is inhabiting this, what he called cosmic consciousness. And he talked about how it's marked by a sense of moral elevation, of intellectual illumination, of loss of the fear of death, sort of abiding in a sense of gratitude and grace and freedom and love and awareness. And so I remember going back home, during the holidays, to my father and say, "Dad, you know, I'm learning all about cosmic consciousness. And, you know, that's really why we're here, Dad. You know, we're not just here to make a bunch of money and, you know, be an influence of some kind. We're really here to just wait." And he said, "You know, I'm spending a lot of money on this education. How's that going to help you get ahead in the world? You're going to get ahead, you know, in the world," and that kind of stuff. But luckily, he resonated a little bit with it. He actually taught me to play the piano. So. but my brother, my younger brother, Ed, I was really delighted because I started sharing these ideas with him, and he was just like, "Yes, let's do it. That's it. This is what we got to do." So, you know, we put our heads together and thought, okay, it's a great idea, but now, like, what do we do? And we thought about it for a while, and we couldn't come up with an answer until one day we hit it. We knew what to do. It was 1975. If you want to attain cosmic consciousness, it's obvious. You just go to California. So that's what we did. I remember telling my parents, "Hey, Dad, you know, Mom, we're going to California," and we wanted to do it like a pilgrimage. So we walked down the driveway with no money, a little backpack, some fresh baked cookies from my mother, and we headed west. And we just walked. We walked, and we got a couple of rides in the beginning, hitchhiking, back when you could kind of hitchhike. But really, it took us a long time to do. We just walked. We weren't really trying to get there fast. It was more of an inner journey. We were reading this book about Ramana Maharshi from India, who said, the main thing to do if you want to wake up is to ask the question, go deeper and deeper, who am I? Just go and self-inquiry. Find out who you are, because most people, we have no idea who we are, what we are. We think we're this body. We think we're this collection of thoughts and memories that comes and goes. We're just a material thing. Find out. He said, don't take any answer. Find out for yourself. So we were meditating every day and walking. After a few months, we got as far as Buffalo. So then we were in Buffalo. It was October. It was already freezing. And I thought, "Well, my gosh, it was beautiful. I heard it at school. It's October. It's Buffalo. You better head south." You know? So we walked, and we actually ended up walking all the way to Alabama. And it took us quite a few months, and we had all kinds of amazing things happening. And, you know, we never went actually hungry. Miracles would happen. But on the way, one of the main events, we ended up at a Zen center in Alabama, but on the way we ended up for a few weeks, about a month, at a community called The Farm in Tennessee, which The Farm in 1975 was the largest hippie commune in the world, and there was about 900 people living there, and they were all from California. We met them in Tennessee. I was like, all right, well, here we are. That ended up being a wonderful experience. I ended up becoming a vegetarian there and a whole lot of other things and learned deepening my meditation. But then we went on from there to a Zen center in Alabama. And which you probably think I'm lying, but there really was a Zen center in Alabama. And eventually ended up from there at a Tibetan Buddhist center in San Francisco, and then Zen monk in Korea, and all these other things. The main point I want, and eventually ended up meeting Alan in Switzerland, which was she heard me play the piano, and then said, my gosh, who's this guy playing the piano? And she bought a CD or a cassette, back in the days of cassettes. And then we came over to make the cover of the first CD, and we fell in love and got married. So we missed out on friends with many, 26th wedding anniversary. But the point I just want to end here, because I know it's getting late, is just the basic idea that when I was on that walk with my brother, I remember so clearly, there were days we were walking along, and we had no reason to be happy in the outer world. I remember we had nothing. Whatever we had, we tried to get rid of it. Remember, I had kind of a heavy pack in the beginning. You have to carry it every day, extra pair of shoes, extra pair of, give it away, But we weren't doing what we were supposed to do. We were not doing what our parents were telling us to do. We were definitely not doing what the society or the education said we should do. But I remember as I was walking down these little roads somewhere in West Virginia or Kentucky or Tennessee somewhere, I would have these waves of joy just washing over me for no reason. And I think that is what happens when we're in some degree connected with our intuition, because then we're living our life. And when we're living our life, then we're connected to the core of our being, which is joy. If we dig down deep enough into our consciousness, we'll find a bubbling spring of great joy and happiness that doesn't mean anything in the outer world at all. Just to be, just being itself, is joy. Not only the beauty around us, the beauty of the earth. How many of you have noticed that the earth is beautiful? Sure you notice, right? That beauty is a reflection of something. It's a reflection of the source that we are, the same, amazingly beautiful and free. And so we quiet our mind and connect with the truth that we are, and then allow that to guide us to live our unique life. Like I said, it doesn't mean everything is easy, but it does mean there's an underlying sense of joy, of rightness, and we can be here to be part of the solution to the problems. There are many problems on our earth, but instead of being part of the problems, part of the domination, we can try to be part of the expression of kindness, compassion, being aware that we're all interconnected, that our lives are interconnected. And so I just want to close with that basic idea that when we connect with our intuition and our own purpose and mission, then we naturally create a field around us. And it naturally encourages other people to do the same thing. So we don't have to try to change other people. Just work on ourselves, create a field of consciousness that reflects our true nature, and then it radiates out to those around us. And I think then, when we actually create a community of people who are, as individuals, doing that inner work, and then we also support each other in that and help bring it to the larger community, then we're doing what every generation is called to do. Every generation, if we don't continue these wisdom teachings to the next generation, they'll die. It's up to us as individuals to manifest them in our lives and then to share them with each other and then to create the unique way that these teachings are to come into the world at this time to help liberate all of us, and to help create the field of truth that is our true nature for our children, for our children's children, the children of all living beings, really are depending on us to do that. So remember, no effort you ever make is ever lost. Every effort does contribute, and together, I'm sure we can continue to unfold our capacities to make a world of freedom and peace and liberation for all beings. So, thank you very much for all your efforts and much love to you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Will, very much. I think we're all looking forward to this afternoon at 12:30. I know I am. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths to God, for we know there is only one power, one presence, one life. So whoever you are, and wherever you are on your journey of transformation, you are always welcome here.